This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome into the Fog.net podcast. My name is Michael Swain, the Kansas beat writer for 24/7 Sports. After a little holiday break, Kevin Flaherty and I are back to discuss the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. We'll talk about the bowl game, the experience for the KU players, and maybe touch on a couple things with the KU offseason. But Kevin, I think we're in offseason mode now, so we've got to ration what we're talking about here with Kansas football. So today, let's talk a lot about the bowl game, what we saw on the field, what it means for KU next year. We can hit a lot of the portal stuff, whether it be incomings, outgoings. Next week, as we are recording this on Tuesday, January 2nd, it's about 10:30 a.m. Spencer Lovell has just gone in the portal. But again, we'll talk about this stuff later because the portal does technically close today, but there's kind of a 48-hour window where things can still be in the works of the paperwork being processed and all that. So we're going to wait till Sunday to hit on the portal stuff. But Kevin, holiday season, I was able to go to California and get some warm weather. How was your holiday season?
Yeah. Quick. We usually go down to see my wife's family in Oklahoma because of some work things for her. Like we wound up driving down the day of Christmas Eve and driving back Christmas later that day. So that was a day with a lot of driving, and then got to see my family Christmas Day and all that stuff up here in Kansas City. I have to ask, just about every Kansas person that I talked to who was going to Phoenix had a golf outing. Did you get any golf in when you went to the Guaranteed Rate Bowl?
No, and I'm bummed because of it. You know, Kevin, this is kind of a theme of at least when I was thinking about the bowl game. Like, if it was 2 days later, if it was like December 28th, like it would be perfect because it would have been enough time to do that. For me, I flew in the day of the game. I think I was on the first flight out of California and got there day of the game, covered the game, went back, spent another day or two with family, and then flew back here. So it was an in and out trip. It was cool to see kind of what they did with KU for the bowl game. It was pretty cool. And look, Kevin, so much of this bowl game looks so much better compared to Memphis of last year. You know, walking on the sideline before the game, you know, chatting with different people, you could just sense that like people were much happier to be at this bowl game instead of the Liberty Bowl last year. Obviously there was so much going on outside of the bowl game last year, right? No running water. It was really cold. There were problems with the team hotel for KU, and this year it's so much smoother. And I think it's really cool that a lot of these guys who are seniors playing in their last bowl game got to experience like a very good one where they're treated well. They've got fun stuff to do. It's warm weather, and it seemed like the morale, I think, around just the program generally was really excited and really happy about the game. And Kevin, my morale, look, I'm going to say this sarcastically, but I'm bribable. You know, I got nothing bad to say about the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. I'm bribable. I got a cool little water bottle.
All right.
It's got the logo on it. Again, I'm bribable. So I got nothing but great things to say about the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. But I do feel like I need like a lot of these, like some flags to throw during this podcast to stop momentum. Got to turn off my mic so nobody can hear me and about how someone committed a personal foul on something that actually didn't happen. Yeah, let's get this out of the way, Kevin.
All right.
How hard was that to watch it on TV? Because I went back and rewatched the game, but I had the sound off. I like, based on everything I saw on social media, it sounded like a disaster of a broadcast. So yeah. I had it muted. Like, what'd you think watching it live?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty rough. I think when you talk to a lot of Kansas fans about broadcasts that they don't enjoy, obviously ESPN Plus comes up a lot. You know, they hate when basketball broadcasts get moved to ESPN Plus, hate when football broadcasts get moved to ESPN Plus. And one of the common comments was, this is worse than an ESPN Plus broadcast. And so I think when you look at all the different things, I think the commentators struggled a little bit. There were some really strange comments. I didn't know if you heard the one where the I think the color commentator made a comment about Devin Neal, who of course at that point committed to come back to school, and he said, well, with a big bowl game in front of NFL scouts, you know, maybe he winds up going. Devin Neal doesn't need more exposure. And the idea that, you know, a bowl game against UNLV, no matter what Devin Neal did, was going to make some NFL team sit up and notice that didn't already know about him, is frankly absurd. But there was a lot of stuff like that where you're just kind of like, I don't know what they're seeing here. I don't know what they're thinking. Like you said, the refs mic was a real issue, because I think a lot of people didn't know what was, I mean, they saw a flag. You could see the hand motions. You didn't know who it was on. You didn't know, you know, what really was going on. And when it's penalty after penalty after penalty for a team that, quite frankly, wasn't very penalized this year, mm-hmm. I think that you add all of those factors together, and it wasn't a great viewing experience for people who weren't there.
Yeah, we're sitting in the press box, which is kind of like – in the corner of the end zone behind UNLV. We couldn't hear anything in the stadium either. And yeah. It was just weird to see, every play, it was like a basketball game, Kevin. You remember last year with some of the KU basketball games where in the second half, there'd be, you know, 18 fouls called in 20 minutes. Yeah. Well, that's what this felt like, where neither team could really get some momentum going. But I will say, like, it's a bummer that the officiating was the way that it was, because this was a fun game. Like,
yeah, you look at that. Really fun offenses, and
yeah,
it should have been an absolute blast of a game. And obviously, I mean, Kansas fans are going to be happy with the result, but you know, it could have been a much more fun experience, certainly, than it was.
Well, remember last year, Kevin, after the Liberty Bowl, how everyone's talking about, oh, well, outside of the playoff games, like, this was the most exciting game because of the comeback, because of the overtimes. And like, this game would have been that if the flags hadn't been thrown and stopped the momentum of the game and really made it such a choppy contest, because this, in terms of a football game, was really, really exciting. Like, you look at what UNLV did on their first drive and the athleticism that they have at some of their skill positions. Obviously, I think KU's tackling was less than stellar, and that's something that I think is going to have to be resolved going into next year. Guys being in the right spot but not being able to tackle, that wasn't great. But I think just an end-to-end game where both teams had guys making plays, you know, there's interceptions, there's turnovers, there's big throws. Like, it has everything that you want in a bowl game. And it's just a bummer that I think some of that gets taken away with the way that it was officiated and the lack of communication and all of those things. But I think we got to start by talking about Jason Bean, because it's really cool for him that you think back to the bowl game last year, kind of the scapegoat, right? I think that was a lot of the conversation after the game was about Jason Bean, the throw, overthrowing it, the play call. And for him to be the one that is out here, you know, thrown for 450 yards, basically, you know, six touchdowns. Yes, there are three interceptions, but this was like a perfect way for Jason Bean to end his college career. And I think it's really cool because it caps a senior season that was really impactful. And yeah, it makes you wonder what happens if he's able to play the whole game against, you know, Texas Tech, or the whole game against, you know, K-State, because I think he was playing at such a high level at the end of the season. But this is just such a good way for him to cap his KU career.
Yeah, you got kind of the whole Jason Bean experience, didn't you? In terms of the big plays, you had the turnovers in the middle of the game. But I think you can almost use the turnovers to show how much he'd grown, right? Because you look at, I think the performance that it is most like from a statistical standpoint would be Oklahoma State, right? In terms of throwing for all these yards, throwing for all these touchdowns, having a few, you know, really impactful turnovers. Against Oklahoma State, he didn't recover. Kansas didn't score, what, in the final 20 minutes or so of that game, whatever it was, and winds up losing a game that, quite frankly, Kansas should have won. And you look at this one, Kansas has, you know, keep shooting itself in the foot with penalties. Bean has the turnovers. UNLV comes back. It's 28-24 heading into the fourth quarter with Kansas facing a fourth and one. Bean makes the long touchdown pass to Lawrence Arnold, you know, which was huge. And then Bean was terrific the rest of the way. And I'm not sure that he has that positive response to adversity earlier in his career. And I think that really shows the growth level. And you know, it's interesting you talking about the bowl game last year, because I do think some of that was at least slightly unfair. You know, everybody looks at a still photo and they say, hey, you know, you missed this wide open wide receiver. What they don't see is, from Jason Bean's point of view, there was a defender right in front of it. He couldn't see that guy. You know, yeah, we can see him. But it wasn't an easy throw to make, and everybody says, oh, well, he should have run it. He should have either run it or put the ball in play, because it was the final play. But at the same time, you're coming off the bench cold. You haven't thrown the ball all game. You know, you're all of a sudden in a, you know, a potential, you know, game-losing situation, because if you make the play, the game continues on. But, you know, to have all of that thrown on sort of one guy the way that it was, and then for him to respond and say, I can't go out like that. That can't be the end of my college career. Mm-hmm. And come back, even knowing, you know, hey, it's Jalen's job. It's, you know, Jalen Daniels is the quarterback. He's the face of the program. You know, Jalen's going to get all the kudos. He's going to get all the things. But I can't have my career end that way. And then to have it end the way that it did for him, it's Hallmark movie type stuff, to be honest with you. I mean, with all of that, and then the way that he grew throughout the season. And, you know, we've said it on this podcast before, I'll say it again, Jason Bean at the end of the regular season, in particular, when you look at Iowa State and Cincinnati, that's as good a quarterback play as Kansas has had since Todd Reesing. And I mean, Jalen's top moments would be in that category too. I'm not saying, you know, Bean was better or Jalen was better. I'm saying in that moment, Bean didn't take anything off the table. He didn't put the football at risk. He was making big clutch plays with both his legs and his arm, and he was doing a lot of really positive things. And so to have it end the way that it did was just terrific.
Yeah, I think so much of it, too, reflects the senior class. Yeah. Because that's something that Lance Leipold has talked a lot about over the last 3 years. You know, when he got to KU, he discussed that there was an, oh no, here we go again feeling with a lot of the team when they'd get up or be close in a game and then something would go wrong and guys would kind of shut down. And I think this game, Jason Bean, I think reflects so much of what has changed about KU, where I think over the course of this season in particular, you saw moments that KU got down in games and they rallied, and you saw moments that seemed to be slipping away from KU and they rallied. You can go to the Oklahoma game. I think you can go to Iowa State. When Iowa State comes out, they score, they make it close, and all of a sudden KU scores a long touchdown to Lawrence Arnold. Like, there are these moments throughout the course of the season that show the mental resiliency that this team had. And I think that moment in that kind of section of the game in the second half, when UNLV started to make their run back into it, before KU was able to kind of, you know, calm things down, really get back to what they were doing and have success and be able to see out the rest of the game, I think it just speaks volumes. I think the culture and the way that this team is led by those older guys who have now been through this, and it's going to be on some of those kind of juniors next year to continue that, because I think that's one of the best things you can have in college football is, I think, the resiliency. You know, I think, Kevin, I don't know if you watched the game last night, but like Texas, Washington, like you saw Texas kind of at the end of the game there when they need the defensive stops, kind of just start dropping their heads like, oh, no, like this isn't going to happen for us. Like, you know, that says something about your culture and how you respond to things like that. So for KU, it speaks volumes about, I think, the people, right? The guys on the team and the work that they've done, that they've got the confidence to do it. So I think the way the game plays out is so cool for those seniors, because those are the guys that help make this happen. So I think that was definitely an overwhelming positive that is a theme of the game. And I think the theme of kind of these first 3 years under Lance Leipold.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would even say, you know, the two games that they lost with Cole Ballard playing quarterback most of the time, Texas Tech, they're behind the eight ball with a quarterback who's never really played. They come back and they tie that game late. And obviously Tech goes down and gets the winning score. But, I mean, it wasn't hanging their heads. They responded to resiliency and came back against Kansas State. They come back and they have a shot in the end zone to take the lead late. K-State winds up picking it off, obviously, and winning that game. But in both of those situations, you know, even though they lost the game, they responded to adversity and you know, they gave themselves a chance at the end. I do have to ask, as somebody who was there, how apparent was Jason Bean's emotion after the game? I mean, in terms of the way that all of it ended, you know, with him getting MVP of the bowl game and everything, what was the emotion like that you got from him?
Well, I think of probably elation. That was one of the ones, you know, walking around the field after, you know, I didn't really see what it was like in the immediate, you know, as the UNLV guy tries to take a cheap shot at him. Like, I don't know what the hell that was about. But he was the most popular guy post game. Like Jim Zabrowski came up, said, you know, congratulations. But I mean, you got his own teammates asking for a photo with him and that trophy. I think it speaks to, I think, Jason and what the teammates and the guys on the team think of him, that after a game like that, everyone's coming up to him and wanting to get a photo with him. You've got staffers, you've got players, coaches, like all different people kind of trying to get a little piece of the final performance of Jason Bean. So I think for him, it was being proud and excited. And even in the post-game press conference, it's still kind of the same level-headed guy that I think you saw, whether it be after a loss in the interviews he did or after a win in the interviews he did. It's always kind of even keel and the same kind of personality that shines through. So I think that was really cool just to see the comparison, how after, right, you know, last year's bowl game, how the way it ended, to see him be kind of the most popular guy post game. I thought that was really neat and really cool to see. I think everyone kind of rally around him and understand that, hey, this is a really big moment for a guy that has had his ups and downs in college. And I think that is maybe a conversation we can have on the next podcast. We talk about the portal and the way things are changing, but I think Jason Bean is a great story for what college football should be. You know, a guy stays at a school, has ups and downs. He isn't always the starter. It isn't always his show, but when it is his time to be the guy, he steps up and he's ready to answer the bell. Like, that's cool. And I think that's something that's going to be lost in college football as guys start moving every year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, moving on from Jason Bean, I think offensively, we were all interested to see, hey, what's this thing going to look like with Jim Zabrowski as a play caller? I think UNLV lined up the way a lot of teams did against Kansas and basically said, we're going to put a bunch of guys in the box. You're not going to run the ball on us effectively, consistently, you know, and we're going to dare you to beat us over the top. And guess what? Kansas beat UNLV over the top. And look at the play of the wide receivers. I think each of the three starters had a major highlight catch. When you think of Luke Grimm kind of winning the 50-50 ball down the field, the catch from Quentin Skinner, and obviously LJ Arnold getting the you got mossed, you know, play. But maybe the biggest play from the receiving core that, you know, probably doesn't get talked about enough, and it was one of the biggest plays of the game, was the block from Douglas Emelian on Devin Neal's 16-yard run on 3rd and 17, because Kansas is probably not going to go for that unless they're close. And Devin Neal goes the outside, Doug Emelian absolutely buries the defender inside that allows Neal to get 16 yards, make it a fourth and one. And then on fourth and one, you know, Kansas calls a little play action bootleg, and that's where Arnold breaks totally clear for the touchdown. And
yep.
if Emelian doesn't make that block, Devin Neal gets, you know, 6-7 yards, maybe, you know, they're probably punting that ball or whatever. Mm-hmm. And instead it sets them up in a situation. And remember, they were only up 28-24 at that point, where if they're giving the ball back to UNLV, you're kind of like, I'm not feeling great about this right now. Instead, you get the touchdown, you get some breathing room. Mm-hmm. It's one of three touchdown passes from Jason Bean in the fourth quarter, and Kansas was kind of off at that point.
Totally. And I think wide receiver blocking, Kevin, yeah. You remember some of the Les Miles teams and how those guys would not block for each other, and it'd be, you know, a running back on the outside, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's running, and then the wide receiver's kind of just jogging down the field, not doing much. Like, you watch the way the KU's wide receivers have been taught to block, right? You think about the job Terrence Samuel has done, and I think just generally the culture of, hey, we're all going to help each other. But I think for me, like, you want to talk about that, like the screen pass to Lawrence Arnold.
Yep.
Like, you've got Luke Grimm and Quentin Skinner both going to fight, basically, to yep. make sure that their guy, Lawrence Arnold, can go and score a touchdown and get as many yards as possible. Like, those are the plays I think speak a lot about the culture. And it's something that Jeff Grimes, who I'll be interested to see what his Twitter game is like. I've seen some Dallas Cowboys tweets, but, you know, he tweeted that, hey, I'll read right here. You know, in a very short time, I've seen that these dudes, parentheses, for me, the three amigos, if you're old enough to know, love each other and play for each other. This type of bond is special. And I agree. I think it's really cool that you've got guys that aren't sulking because they're not getting the targets or the receptions or the yards. Like, they're all out there fighting for each other and hoping and helping the team. So I think that's really cool. And you're right. Like, Douglas Emelian is going to go down. I don't know what his receiving numbers will be next year, but like, in my mind, he'll be the ultimate team player because the way he blocks, like, he loves yep. to block, and you see it when every time he's on the field, they run to his side. Like, he's engaging with this guy and moving him back. And I think offensively for KU, that's such a positive thing to have, that kind of team bond where guys aren't jealous of each other and they want to fight and keep going. So generally though, Kevin, I want to ask you this. What did you think about the game plan that KU had and the way that Jim Zabrowski called the game? Because I was really impressed. I thought it was a really well-called yeah. game. And I think at times maybe Jason Bean's decision-making wasn't great on two of those interceptions. And I don't think you can control that with your play calling, but I thought it was a pretty well-called game.
Yeah, and Kansas wound up being fairly balanced from a run-pass standpoint in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, the plays that they called. Obviously, they're a lot more effective throwing the ball. But when you looked at it, I liked the fact that when they threw the ball, they were throwing with purpose, right? They were shot plays down the field. They really gave those receivers a chance to make plays. And I think, you know, when you look at how they were able to scheme certain guys open, I liked the run to Quentin Skinner. I liked the screen pass to Lawrence Arnold. They did things to get some of these guys the ball in maybe ways that we aren't used to seeing them get the ball. And so I thought that was interesting, obviously, because I think as great as Andy Kotelnicki is, I think one of the takeaways with him is the fact that he was so creative, right? You were always kind of waiting to see, okay, like, when Andy feels like he's in his bag, what's he going to call now? You know, whether it was putting, you know, Armaje Reed Adams in the slot and then having him motion into run power, or, you know, lining up the offensive line a certain way, or running this sort of trick play with motions and handoffs and things like mm-hmm. that. Is Kansas still going to have that element when he goes? You know, because I think that with a lot of what Kansas does, it's pretty simple. You know, they run wide zone, they run triple option concepts. You know, the passing concepts that they run aren't super complicated, mm-hmm. but they dress it up in a lot of really creative ways. And I think, you know, that's part of what makes this such an effective system. And so I think with Jeff Grimes coming in, you wanted to know, okay, we saw what Jeff Grimes did at Baylor. He may be a little bit different at Kansas, depending on personnel and things like that. I happen to think they'll still have some triple option in there because it's, you know, it's effective with what they do, with what Jalen does, et cetera. But with Zebrowski calling plays, one of the things that I wanted to see was the creativity, right? I wanted to see, is that still going to be in the room, even if it's not with the primary play caller? And I think that you did see that quite a bit. The other thing, and I think, you know, we may see some Kansas fans, you know, who are watching this raise up their hands and yell out hallelujah. No sugar huddle.
No sugar huddle. That was great to see. I think it seemed a little more, not as much weird stuff. Yeah. Like that for me, like there wasn't much wildcat. There wasn't as much of just the funky stuff that I think KU was doing with Koldenecki. And look, that stuff has a time and place. And sure. I'd actually argue that that type of stuff fits a bowl game better than it does a regular season game. And This was actually the time for the weird stuff, right? Have fun in the bowl game. Then maybe, you know, on a big play, when you're going to have your running back throw the ball, like what the heck? So I think that it's funny that, you know, the time when you're thinking, oh, things could get weird because it's a bowl game, it's actually the time when it didn't get weird, because I think Jim Zebrowski is maybe a little more, I don't know if pragmatic is the right word, but just not going to do some weird stuff. So I'll be fascinated to see. Obviously, Jeff Grimes was around the team during the bowl prep process. I saw him there. Side note, he's tall. He's big. He's a big guy. Total side note, just walking by him in the hallway. But I'm fascinated to see kind of in spring ball, right, what KU changes offensively. But let's get to defense, Kevin. Sure. I think this was a great performance to – we talk about Jason Bean, right, capping his Kansas career with a really good game. I thought Kenny Logan, like, you have to give Kenny Logan a lot of credit, Kevin, because I think you and I sat out, or at least I did, sat here in this very chair and on this very podcast and talked about, you know, maybe Kenny Logan a little overrated after last season. And I thought he really, really struggled last year and did not have a good year. And for him to come back and have the season that he had, where I thought across the board, every single game, he was one of KU's top three or four best defensive players. Consistency was there. His level of play, I think, was really stellar. And for him to end the bowl game as the defensive MVP, win a bowl game in his final game with Kansas, you think about all the things he's been through, whether it be the COVID season, the coaching transition, a down year last year, deciding to come back to Kansas. Like, it's another one of these college football success stories that I just love. And I think it's such a great part of what makes college football so cool, that there are guys like this that maybe aren't going to have a huge NFL career ahead of them. The ability to have success in college, to impact winning and to impact a team turning it around. I think it's really cool that Kenny Logan, of all guys, was the guy that had this game and got that recognition. I just think it's cool.
When you think about 2000, the COVID year, and it seemed like that year Kenny Logan left every single game getting nicked up, right? Like, you know, it actually became, you know, kind of a running joke or whatever a little bit, because, you know, he get the wind knocked out of him, hurt his shoulder, whatever, you know, leave for a few plays, and then he was back on the field. And he kept coming back out and kept coming back out for a team that went 0-9. And you think about going from how frustrating that had to be, where, you know, they didn't have the pieces in front of him. So he was forced to make, you know, pretty much every other tackle, it felt like. And, you know, having to do that in a game where you're down 35 points isn't fun. You know, when the running back breaks through again and you have to get him down again, and you're down big, and you're not going to win, and you're not really playing for anything, you know, from a victory standpoint, that's not easy to do. And that's not fun for a player to do. He sticks around. You know, one of the moments that I think about, I can't remember if I put this in my article about Lance Leipold's rebuild or whatever in there, is Logan and Leipold just embracing after the Texas game. And I, you know, after they upset Texas and Austin, and to get their second win of the season. And if you remember, Leipold said what he told Kenny Logan was basically like, okay, like, you know, we have to push you even harder on Monday now. Like, you know, yes, we got this win. It's great. Be happy for it. But this is just the start. You know, we need to be more consistent, more deliberate, you know, all of those things. And I think Lance Leipold and the staff kind of poured into Kenny Logan. And, you know, he came back. He had, you know, some All-America mention preseason heading into 2022, you know, certainly All Big 12 mention. And he had a bad year. He really did, you know, and especially compared to what he had been the previous year. And then to come back, to rebound, you know, all of the things that he did this year, like he said, to get defensive MVP and end his career the way that he did, was just another great story and, you know, a heartwarming deal for a guy who had been through so much, you know, at Kansas. It's not easy to go through a season where you don't win a single game. And if you remember that year, Kansas was only close in like one game. So like it, you know, it wasn't even the thing where it was like, man, we're so close, we're going to break through. No. He had to buy into Lance Leipold's vision because there was nothing else there. And so, you know, it was, I think that's kind of a cool story. I'm glad you brought all that up.
Yeah. And I think too, right, there are other guys on defense that have that similar story. Rich Miller really developed, you know, I think he's one of the guys that is an important cultural guy on the team. And I think KU will miss that leadership that he brings on the field. I think other guys, you look at someone like Devin Phillips, man, watching him again, I think not forgot, but I think it just solidified how much of an underrated addition he was for KU and how solid he was just watching him take on double teams the whole game and be strong and sturdy. Like, KU will miss him next year. And you look at someone like Hayden Hatchard, the depth he provided and being a guy that, again, culturally was willing to put in the work and showed up every day really ready to give it his all and really cared about Kansas. There are a lot of these stories. And obviously now Melo Dotson and Kobe Bryant have announced their return. KU gets both of them back. KU will have O.J. Burroughs and Marvin Grant expected to return as well. Jalen Dye can take a step forward this offseason. Like, the secondary for KU next year is going to be really solid. As long as they can continue to kind of keep it together. So I think that's a huge positive, but as it pertains for the bowl game, like, I think it just continues to show that KU needs to get better at linebacker. Like, that's kind of my big takeaway. And KU needs to find a defensive end in the transfer portal who can rush the passer, because golly, they could not do that against UNLV. And it took some creative stuff with stunts and guys being able to get some added pressure in there, where it wasn't like during the season when KU kind of line up and send Austin Booker and Jeremy Robinson off the edge and get some pressure. They needed to get really creative to do it. Obviously, Austin Booker is going to go to the NFL, you know, as of this Tuesday past 11 a.m. He's not announced anything, but I can tell you he is not going back to Kansas. He is going to go to the NFL draft. It's just a question of whenever he wants to make that announcement himself. So KU's got to find another defensive end in the transfer portal. Obviously, I think you and I are both very high on Deshaun Warner, Dak Brinkley, and what they are going to bring. But it's still freshmen, and you don't want to go into a season saying, man, we really hope these freshmen are ready to play from day one in the Big 12. Like, I don't think you want that. So that's a need. But generally, this defensive performance, I think it hones in the fact that next year KU secondary is going to be awesome. And the athleticism they're going to have at safety with O.J. Burroughs and Marvin Grant is going to be really good. And they've got two cover corners in Melo and Kobe that are going to be at the top of the Big 12. So I think that's an area to get really excited about for the defense and for folks that are on the VIP board and paying attention to our updates there. You know, linebacker and defensive line, those are kind of the two big areas that KU has to get reinforcements at because of the NFL and the transfer portal. So what'd you think of the defensive performance, I guess, overall, Kevin?
Yeah, another guy that I thought really stood out, and, you know, I think he does a great job every week, but he does it in some kind of unsung roles, if you will. Craig Young had some monster plays in this game, and it was great to see him go out that way, because I think they do ask him to do a lot of really tough stuff where there aren't a whole lot of linebackers in the country that they ask to hey, go out and defend this slot receiver. And, you know, we're not going to give you a ton of help. We trust in your athleticism or whatever else. And I think sometimes people watch it and they're like, Craig Young's not really making a ton of tackles. He's not, you know, really pressuring the quarterback that much. He's not making plays in the backfield. You know, he's not really making an impact. But with what they ask him to do, you know, that's a really tough deal. And for him to, you know, he had the tackle for loss. He wound up with an interception as well. You know, to have the big plays that he did were really good. I think Jason Gilliard has a chance to be pretty good at that Hawks spot. You know, he obviously rotated through this year, had some good moments. Like you said, linebacker needs to clean stuff up. And, you know, it's not even just the starting guys necessarily that you project. I think they're going to need a little bit more depth as well, and depth of athleticism in that group. You talked about Devin Phillips, and I'm glad you did, because I think when people put out their lists at the end of the year, and 24/7 Sports, we've certainly done that, of the most impactful transfer guys, he's not going to show up, right? Because he's not going to tip the scale in terms of numbers or things like that. But when you talk about what a guy means to a defense, Kansas's defense was significantly better this year than it was a year ago. And, you know, not just overall, but you look at some of the key stops that they were able to make over the course of the season when Kansas had to have said stops, and Devin Phillips was a big part of that. And, you know, as 1 year rentals go, you know, or 1 year transfers, you know, I think, you know, he made about it as good an impact as he can. I'm interested with that defensive line group now. Like you said, they did not pressure UNLV very well at all. And so you look at, that was one of the things that I think screamed out at me, like, hey, you know, and it wasn't even the lack of sacks. You know, I think Kobe had the lone sack, right? It wasn't even it wasn't even the lack of sacks so much as the lack of pressure. You know, they weren't making him uncomfortable. They weren't moving him out of the pocket or different things like that. I think, like you said, you got to go get a pass rusher, you know, preferably somebody who's proven. And then you want to develop the guys you have, you know, guys like Dylan Brooks, they have some ability and you want them to take that next step and be able to have a big season. But when you look at this game in particular and what it says moving forward, Kansas just didn't get pressure in this game.
Yep, exactly. So I think overall, you know, this is something that I think KU, you know, here's a good example of it, Kevin. I can't pull it up because we'll get, you know, copyright stuff on this. And I like our YouTube channel, even if it's not even close to Kobe Bryant's YouTube channel in terms of subscriber numbers. is you look at the first play from scrimmage for KU defensively, and Devin Phillips knocks back the guard, and it's a play to the left, and it's a 4 yard loss, and JB Brown is right there, just got to make a tackle, and he totally whiffs, and all of a sudden it's a big gain, and the ball gets rolling for UNLV. Like, that is an example, I think, of the impact guys on the defensive line can have and had this year, and the areas where KU has to get better next year, right? Guys like JB Brown, Cornell Wheeler, Tywon Berryhill have to get better just tackling. And I think that'll be a big point of emphasis. And that's something that this coaching staff, I think, is really good at. You've seen it over the course of time, right? Their first full off season, what was the goal? Hey, let's just get our defense installed so we're not having busted coverages and we can actually do things. And can we get our offense installed so we can actually run things? Then the next year you saw some improvement, right? KU's defense was a little bit better. They made some plays, wasn't consistent, but there were some seeds there. And the offense blew up because they were able to have stuff happen. Then last offseason, right, it was about physicality. Hey, let's not get pushed around every game. Let's make sure there are some games where we can push the opponent around. What happened? I think KU is a more physical team in what? They played 13 games. I'd say probably 10 of those games, KU was the more physical team. You know, that's a huge improvement. And so now you look at, cool, I think broadly this team is set, right? The team knows what it's doing, and physically it's able to compete. So now you can focus on some of those more tackling's not intricate, but it's very specific and say, okay, guys, like we have to be better at tackling this year. For the offense, you could say, hey, we've got to be able to take on blocks a little bit differently on our offensive line, because when teams stack the box, we kind of struggled to get Devin Neal free. Like there are another steps that you can take. And I think this coaching staff is so detail oriented that they'll be able to find ways to get improvement. So I think for me defensively, like just tackling from the linebackers is going to be such a huge part, because the guys have to be in the right spots and then they've got to be able to tackle. That's all you need from the linebackers. And so I think that's going to be a big point of emphasis this offseason.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, it's funny when defenses struggle, people tend to point to the defensive coordinator first, right? Like it's always that guy's fault. But all a defensive coordinator can do is put a guy in position. You know, he can't make the play himself. He can put the guy, he can call the blitz that frees up the guy. And if the guy misses the sack, that's not the defensive coordinator's fault. And so I think, you know, it's funny, and I'll be the first to say this. Heading into this season, I was a wait and see still on Brian Borland. And I thought,
hater.
I thought over the course of the season, you know, he won me over quite a bit. Mm. And I think that even when Kansas had some defensive struggles, there were struggles where Kansas was generally in the right position, but didn't make a play.
Yeah. And I think that's the next big part, right? Getting playmakers. And that's where this high school recruiting comes into play. And we could talk more about roster construction and portal and all that next week. But I think just generally you can see the vision with a lot of these guys, like Ja'Cory Stewart at linebacker, right? Physical, fast, explosive athlete who can catch the ball when the ball's thrown to him. Yeah. That's a big thing. You look at the defensive ends Cave's bringing in. You can even look at last year's recruiting class. Guys like Jameel Croft, well, he was getting reps on special teams. Like for this coaching staff, that is how this progression works.
Yeah.
You know, you get time on special teams and maybe you get like 5 to 10 reps on your respective side of the ball. And then maybe you're a part of the rotation a little bit more consistently. And someone like Jameel Croft being a true freshman playing on special teams is a huge deal. Keaton Kubeka played, I think, the first 2 snaps of the bowl game at wide receiver. Like that's huge that he's already getting offensive snaps as a true freshman. So I think you just see this program starting to get kind of that ball rolling. It's a snowball. I think a lot of times in college football where it's about talent acquisition through high school, making sure they're developed in the system so that they know what they're doing when they do take the field. And then they get 2 to 3 years of level of play. And maybe that's starting, maybe that's as a rotational piece. But I think, Kevin, one guy we have to talk about that we haven't talked about yet is Calvin Clements starting his first game at left tackle as a true freshman. I think we both talked about it when he committed. We thought, hey, it's going to take some time, right? Developmental guy, you know, playing in Kansas is not like playing in the Dallas area where you're going against 5 stars every week. And so I wasn't sure how it was going to go for him, but it's, as soon as he got on campus in the spring of last year, he really started to impress. And I think for him to start the bowl game at left tackle as a true freshman, that's huge. What'd you think of the way that he played?
Yeah, I thought he played well. I thought you could see some rawness. You could see some freshman in him in a couple different ways. I think the strength needs to continue to improve. You know, I thought there were a couple times where he made the block, got in position, didn't quite move his guy like, you know, maybe he will here in a year or two with another offseason in the weight room. I thought some of his pass pro sets were maybe a little bit raw as well. But I say all that, and, you know, you want to know the reason that we didn't talk about him? We didn't notice him that much. And that's a great thing for an offensive line. I mean, Joe Posnanski wrote a column one time about Will Shields, you know, the Chiefs Hall of Fame lineman. He said the best thing about Will Shields is you totally forget that he's even on the football field. He never gets called for penalties. He doesn't, you know, get beat for big plays. You know, you just forget he's out there. And you know, honestly, what, a quarter into that game, you're not thinking, hey, Calvin Clements is out there as a true freshman left out. He looked like he belonged. You weren't noticing him because he was missing a bunch of plays. And so I think, you know, to me, like I said, I mean, yeah, there are things to clean up, to improve, whatever. But the biggest thing you can say is we didn't come out of that game saying, man, you know, okay, you had a freshman at left tackle, though. No, I mean, it wasn't a storyline. And I think that's about the most positive thing that you could say about him.
Yeah, I think you saw all the things that if you talk to people around the program that have people excited. It's the natural size. Like watching him warm up next to KU's other offensive linemen, he looks different than the other guys KU has. That is a huge part. I think the movement ability for him, you saw at times when he's shuffling and sliding into pass pro, you can just see the way he moves that it's like, oh, wow, like this guy is a very fluid athlete at that size. So for him, it's just going to be about getting in the weight room, getting bigger and stronger, because there were times when he would square a guy up with good technique and just wouldn't be able to drive him in the run game. Yep. And that's a result of a guy being checks watched this time last year, you know, playing at Free State. Like there's a big difference in the strength, and strength doesn't come in 1 year. Like that is a 2-3 year thing where developing the strength and the power to be able to dominate guys in the trenches. And just for him to be able to hold his own, like you said, Kevin, and not be somewhere where you're like, oh my God, Calvin Clements is getting cooked every play. Like they've got to figure something out. They got to send Jared Casey over to his side or Mason Fairchild. Like the other guy that was getting cooked was on the right side, you know? And so I think that's something that for KU is really positive in the long term. Cause I think if you talk to Calvin, he's like, he's a smart guy, he's cerebral, and he's going to figure it out in terms of the mental side, and he's going to put in the work. I have no doubt about that. So I think it's really exciting, and I'm fascinated to see what the left tackle competition looks like this offseason, because you got to say he's the favorite to start right now. You know, I don't know if Logan Brown's going to be the guy that's going to take that job from him. So I think that's a really fascinating storyline for this offseason. Who wins the left tackle spot, and is Calvin Clements the guy? Because if so, Kevin, you're talking about a 4-year starter, right? Yeah. Maybe 3 if things go well and maybe he leaves early. But like, that's kind of crazy to think about. You know, that's like a Kima Deneji type of deal where he started out of necessity, and maybe it would be necessity next year, but like Clements is good enough to play at Kansas at this level. And next year with another full offseason, like I think he'd be perfectly fine as a starter.
I think did you say that Kubeka started the game?
I don't know if he started, but he played on the first drive a couple snaps.
Okay. The reason I asked is, you look at Lance Leipold recruits, like guys that Lance Leipold has actually recruited, not in the transfer portal, but from high school guys who started for Kansas. I think, and I could be wrong on this, I think are Damon Greaves at punter and Calvin Clements at left tackle.
Yep.
And he's had multiple recruiting classes. So, I mean, that's not a knock on the other guys. I think we've talked about how old and experienced Kansas has been for multiple years now. Last year, they led the Big 12 in number of starters coming back. When you look at like Bill Connolly at ESPN, his returning production numbers, Kansas led the country in returning production. And so for the last 2 years, Kansas has been incredibly old and experienced. And those are returning guys. Those aren't even counting the transfers you added in each of those classes. And so there hasn't been a need for Lance Leipold to tap into his high school guys yet, from a starting standpoint on offense or defense. You know, you've seen Mason Ellis on special teams. You've seen guys like that. And like you said, that's part of the process. But for Calvin Clements as a true freshman to get a start at left tackle, I think says quite a bit, especially when you look at the rest of the roster and say, okay, like young guys as of this point haven't really needed to step up or go into those spots. There hasn't been we have to start this guy out of necessity type deal. And Calvin Clements just got a start at left tackle.
Right. It's like if you're going to tab your like most important positions in football, it's quarterback, it's left tackle, and I think it's probably defensive end. And to have someone so young with so much upside starting there is exciting for the long term and for the future of Kansas. So, Kevin, that's what I got on the bowl game. I think it's always a fascinating thing now because it gives you a look ahead next year, and I think it's exciting to look a year from now and what KU could accomplish, right? I think health is going to be the biggest part for KU. I've covered it with that Iowa State team that returned a lot of guys, had the expectations to go to the Big 12 title game, and they got banged up in camp and never really found their form. So, like, injuries are going to be a big part of the next kind of, you know, whatever. We're in January now. It's so weird to say that.
Yeah. But
over the next, 8 months, you know, that's going to be a big, big key. And Jalen Daniels is going to be the guy that I think a lot of focus is put on, because I think a lot is going to ride on his availability next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get into, you know, 2024 expectations, all those things, you know, at another time. Mm-hmm. But closing the door on 2023 in this bowl game, Kansas came in, the number was 6, according to Las Vegas. I mean, that was the win total that was set for them. And if you remember, we were talking on this podcast about it. Was it DraftKings or somebody said one of the biggest, what?
I picked 7 wins, so I'm wrong. But yeah, you're right. DraftKings had
under. You picked 7. I think I picked 7 as well. But the Vegas number was 6. And I think it was DraftKings or one of those sites said that picking the under for Kansas was one of the most popular bets this year mm-hmm. that they had. And so a lot of people didn't even think Kansas would get to 6. And so, you know, I look at it as obviously in a vacuum, 9 wins, huge success, first bowl win, huge success, all of these different things. I do think there's always going to be a little bit of an element of what if, though, because I think if we're sitting here and we're being honest, there was a chance that Kansas was the second best team in the Big 12 this year to Texas. When you look at the fact that Kansas had a chance to win that game at Oklahoma State, led in the fourth quarter, you know, made a lot of mistakes there. The two games that they lose by a total of 7 points to Texas Tech and Kansas State were obviously, you know, you're in a rough spot at the quarterback position and everything else. It reminds me a little bit, if Kansas plays Houston in basketball tomorrow, right, and somebody says to you beforehand, Kansas is going to be up 8 at halftime, you would take it every single day of the week.
Yeah.
Now, there's multiple ways to get that point. And if it's a really close game and it's like a 3-point game and Kansas pushes it up to 8 right before half, you're going to the locker room and, you know, you're high-fiving people and everything else. If you absolutely dominate the half and you're up like 18 and Houston cuts it down to 8 and you go into the locker room, it's a very different feeling. Would you take 8 heading in by 8? Absolutely. But there's different feelings for it. And so in a vacuum, huge success this year, obviously, you know, getting to the wins that they did, all of those different things. I also think the way the year played out, the fact that they had those chances to maybe sneak into the Big 12 title game, all of those different things, I think there's always going to be a little bit of that, you know, what if or man, it could have been even better than it was. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I'd also say I think there are a lot of college football teams that are going to say, yeah, oh, well, if these two moments had gone our way, you know, we'd have two more wins. I think that's kind of the nature of college football when you have a competitive product.
K-State could have beaten Texas. Like K-State lost to Texas in overtime. And so as much as – and the reason I bring that up is, you know, Kansas fans point to that K-State game a lot as, oh, if we had Jason Bean, never mind Jalen Daniels, we win that game by double digits or whatever. K-State could turn around and say, well, you know, we could have beaten Texas. You know, and around we go.
And the nice part is, though, Kevin, at the end of the day, the nice part is we can have this conversation at this point of the year, right? We're not recording this podcast, you know, December 2nd, talking about, oh, well, you know, 3 wins for Kansas. All right. I mean, who are they going to hire as the next head coach? Like, it's good to be able to have these conversations that I think a lot of other college football programs can have now, where you're playing competitive football week in and week out. And there are games that are going to happen in the course of a football season that are going to be close, and they're going to involve moments that don't go your way. And there are other ones that are going to involve moments that do go your way, and you're going to win a close game, you know, as a result. So I think generally, like, it's a net positive that 2 years ago, if you would have said, hey, KU's going to win 9 games, you say, oh my God, like, what? Like, that's great. Yeah. That's incredible. And I think it speaks to the place that Lance Leipold, the coaching staff, and the players have this program, that we can sit here and have this conversation now, right? And say, man, well, you know, two bounces the ball. If Trevor Wilson doesn't fumble it, you know, or muff the punt, you know, KU beats K-State, and all of a sudden, you know, you're looking at maybe a 10-win season. It's good that KU football is in this place. And you're right. Like, there are moments in the season that you say, man, if that had gone KU's way, maybe they are playing in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, which I'm so pissed off about, Kevin. So pissed that they didn't go to the Pop-Tarts Bowl. That would have been electric.
I was going to say, I saw a bunch of K-State fans on Twitter, you know, talking about the viewership numbers and, you know, everybody tuned into our bowl. And I just wanted to be like, they tuned in for the Pop-Tart. It wasn't even the football part of it. It was the fact that we killed a Pop-Tart on live TV, and then, you know, they wound up eating it. But it's, you know, back to your original point. When
you got me crying, Kevin. It's so absurd that a Pop-Tart
died so that we could live.
Oh my god! It's so ridiculous. I love college football.
Oh yeah, it was absolutely amazing. And you know, it's funny, you think about, I mean, obviously it's not free advertising; they paid to sponsor it. But the amount of advertising that Pop-Tarts got, and the amount of chatter that Pop-Tarts got from sponsoring that bowl was just off the charts. But you look at the year before Lance Leipold arrived, which was, I get that it was a COVID season. It was weird. There were only 9 games. Teams didn't have full rosters. In that season, Kansas had, they went 0-9, and they only had one game that was separated by one score, when they lost the Texas Tech in the season finale. So you're sitting here right now, we're talking about, okay, you got to 9, maybe they could have gotten to 11 or whatever. In that year, you're sitting there saying, KU was at 0, maybe they could have gotten to 1. So yeah, I mean, there's a major difference in that feeling and everything else. But, you know, as great as the Pop-Tarts Bowl was, and, you know, it was a cultural touchstone moment for those of us in college football, I think Kansas will likely have its sights set on an even bigger bowl game heading into next year. And I know that, you know, potentially even with the expansion, the college football playoffs. So that'll be something to watch. And, you know, I just know if I'm the college football playoff, I try to get the Pop-Tarts Bowl, one of those bowl games.
That would be elite viewing. But yeah, Kevin, we can talk about all that. We got a long off season ahead. Long off season ahead. So I think next week we'll talk about the portal, who KU's lost, obviously, you know, so far, right, as we were finishing up recording, it's Spencer Lovell, Armaje Reed-Adams, both going in the portal. I don't think Armaje is in yet. I can check real quick. Yeah, not yet. The expectation is that he'll go in today. But yeah, next week, talk about portal, and then we can probably get into more off-season-y topics soon after. But Kevin, I've enjoyed doing these podcasts with you. Excited to keep things rolling. Yeah, obviously, for folks that are watching on the YouTube channel, thanks as always for liking and subscribing to the channel. Make sure you're doing both those things, dropping comments. All of that stuff helps us reach more KU fans so we can continue to get this channel to grow. So maybe one day, Kevin, we can get to as many YouTube subscribers as Kobe Bryant. For folks watching
This is going to be a thing.
Oh, it is. It is the race to match Kobe, and we're never going to get there. maybe one day. But for folks listening on their podcast platform of choice, make sure you're leaving ratings, reviews. Again, those do go a long way in helping us reach more KU fans. For Kevin Flaherty, I'm Michael Swain. Thanks as always for listening to the Fog.net podcast. We'll be back next Sunday with another podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.